Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow, heading into the final week of the regular season with some big games ahead for the teams still trying to snag a playoff berth. And we'll focus on the teams with the best chances to do that in this episode, with Guy Haberman coming on from SiriusXM and the Pac-12 Network and the Haberman and Middlecoff podcast. We're also going to be touching base with my guy, Sean O'Hara, who has some thoughts on O-line play this year, the rash of big man touchdowns this season, and of course, the direction of his former team, the New York Giants. First, though, the playoff chat, which is way more fun. I got to tell you right off the top, scenarios suck. I think scenarios suck. I hate that part of the season. The, well, if this happens and that happens and this other thing can happen, but if you take one of those things out, then this totally different thing happens. I just can't. So for purposes of the content that you're about to consume, know this. There is a chance for the Ravens or Steelers to make the playoffs in the AFC, but because their scenarios are a little bit convoluted and require other teams to help them out, we're not going to focus on those. This week, we're going to focus on the teams that have some degree of control and or probability on their side. And so with that, we welcome back to the show Guy Haberman, who was awesome a month ago when he joined my Yay, USC is relevant again because they hired Lincoln Riley episode, which is probably what we should have named the episode because it really gets to the heart of the message that I was trying to convey. Anyway, he was great on that episode, and now he's back with some NFL thoughts. So let's break the huddle with the born to be in broadcasting with that name, Guy Haberman.
Hello, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Ready.
All right, Guy Haberman, thank you so much for making time. Welcome to the show.
Good to be back.
Yay.
Sorry, I'm wearing UCLA colors for the second.
It's not okay.
It's not intentional.
It feels intentional a little bit when it's two times in a row, but that's okay. A little baby blue, I can look at it. Let's talk a little NFL here. So there are a couple of matchups this week with a few open spots in terms of playoffs. And one of the teams that is vying for a spot is in your backyard there in the Bay Area. In the NFC, the open spot's either going to go to the Niners or to the Saints. And the Niners have two ways to get in, though neither is expected to happen, according to Vegas. If the Niners beat the Rams, they're in. Game in LA, Rams favored by 4.5. The second scenario, if the Saints lose to Atlanta, San Francisco is in. That game in Atlanta, Saints favored by 4.5. If neither of those things happen, the Niners lose to the Rams and the Saints beat the Falcons, then the Saints go, because the Niners do not have a tiebreaker in that situation against the Saints. I kind of hate scenarios. Do you hate scenarios? I feel like my brain sort of turns off when people talk about them and I'm like, just get to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
no head to head. The head to head is the best scenario. You start talking about conference records.
Right.
Ugh. I think the great thing about some of those conference tiebreakers is it really sheds a light on missed opportunities, though. And the 49ers have missed a lot of opportunities, or common opponent tiebreakers, same deal. And the 49ers have missed a lot of opportunities.
So I think the Niners are an interesting team, though, because I guess they kind of have a decision to make here. And one of the biggest question marks surrounding this team is who they should start at quarterback either this week and or if they get to the postseason. If they get to the postseason, I think this is an interesting question because it really comes down to what you think is realistic to expect from the rest of the team. In my opinion, right? Do you have a team that you think can go on a run and win enough games to win a Super Bowl? Or are you like trying to steal a win? What do you think is actually realistic in terms of expectations? I think that changes the decision about which quarterback you're going to go with. Do you?
I think for us, there's a lot of different ways to talk about it. I think for Kyle Shanahan, so far this year, every decision he's made about quarterback has come down to Jimmy Garoppolo's availability. When Jimmy Garoppolo's been available, he's been starting quarterback. Now, I'm not convinced that Jimmy Garoppolo, my guess is that he's not going to be available this week, right? He's got a thumb injury that might require surgery at the end of the year on his throwing hand. This isn't Baker running around, right, with a brace on his non-throwing shoulder. This is a throwing hand injury for Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think that combined maybe a little bit with how Trey Lance looked, which is better and better and better as the game wore on last week, albeit against the Houston Texans, I think makes Trey Lance the starter in a must-win game. But I think I think Trey Lance might have thrown for 350 yards. If Jimmy Garoppolo was 100%, I still think Kyle might go with Jimmy Garoppolo this week. Just based on, even though he doesn't trust him a lot, it feels like maybe he trusts him at this point more than than Trey Lance, but maybe he found a little something as the game wore on last week, again, against the Houston Texans, that would give him a little more confidence in Trey Lance. But I think a couple of things, big picture with this team. To miss the playoffs this year would be a massive failure, given that they made a decision. They made a decision not to develop Trey Lance this year on the field and to play Jimmy Garoppolo. And they made that decision because they thought with Jimmy Garoppolo, they could, at one point in time, I think they thought they could be a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
They could definitely be a playoff team. And so if they miss the playoffs while paying Jimmy Garoppolo $23 million, and we get to next year and Trey Lance has played 2.5 more games after one season of NFL football than he played, he played no games. He played one game in 2020. Remember, North Dakota State put on that, I think they played Central Missouri or something like that, one game showcase for him. So he's played one game since his last full season as a college football quarterback. Now we'll have this season. They won't make the playoffs, and he will have played 3.5 total games since his last season as a full-time starter. That would be a miscalculation and a failure by the 49ers. And I think where it could really bite them is, what does 2022 then look like? And I think 2022, at least to start, will have this cloud hanging over it of, all right, you spent last year not developing Trey Lance. Does that cost you the 22 season as well? After you traded away, you don't have a 22 set first rounder. You don't have a 22 third rounder. You traded that one away. You don't have a 23 first rounder. So I think it's imperative that they make the playoffs this year. Or it's imperative that Trey Lance is really good right away. And I even think if you make the playoffs, Lindsay, and are like one and done,
right,
even then you can look back a year later and go, that probably wasn't worth it. But at least in the moment, okay, we got it. You're trying to win now, and we understand that. So I think there's a lot riding on this game on Sunday for the 49ers.
Well, when you say they didn't develop Trey Lance, you could look at that two ways, right? One, you obviously want to get somebody reps on the field in game. That's different than practices and stuff like that. But there was a lot of talk coming into the season about him being maybe one of the least ready guys to take the field that we talked about in terms of the top of the draft class at quarterback. And so maybe this year they think they did develop him in some of the ways that they thought he needed development, that they could get that done in the classroom, that they could get that done on the field. Do you think that there's anything to that?
Yeah, that's possible. Definitely. Now we won't know that answer until 2022, but it's definitely possible that we're a month into the 2022 season and we look back and go, okay, that actually wasn't a total waste. But I think you'd be hard pressed to say that, for anyone that watched the Niners Texans, Trey Lance looked like a guy starting his first game again early in that game. It took him a little while to settle in, which is understandable. His last start came in early October. So, you don't get to, you got to start over a little bit. So it's definitely possible for sure. But I think when you've got a young quarterback, we see it repeatedly around the league. You have to get that guy ready to kind of earn the almost inevitable $25 million or $35 million, depending on how these, by the time Trey Lance is up for a contract, whether he's good or not, what are quarterbacks going to be making? I mean, it's going to be a massive amount of money in yearly salary. And it's going to be even though the number goes up and the cap goes up, it's always going to be probably relatively a large chunk of your cap, right? No matter how big the cap gets. So the faster you get that guy ready, the better. And that'll be the big question for the 49ers in 2022. Did they accomplish what you're talking about with Trey Lance, in the classroom?
So to me, looking at this week and the situation in the NFC, the Niners have the tougher road, I feel like, to get in, but I feel like they're the more worthy team to get into the postseason. The Saints do not feel like a postseason team. Mm-hmm. I give Sean Payton and everybody else there tons of credit for them being in the position that they're in. I think Sean Payton, maybe because they're so unimpressive when you look across the board, you kind of just throw the team away. I think his name should maybe be mentioned in the coach of the year conversation a little bit more, just because of where they are, considering what he's had to work with on the offensive side in particular. But I don't necessarily, to me, they're like the Bears last year. They're a team that is kind of wasting our time if they make it into the postseason, because even if they can steal one, they're not going anywhere. And it's so, let's just move on. The Niners, I feel like, are a little bit more interesting because they feel like a team that could knock a team off here or there, steal a win, maybe go on a run. But then to me, that's where the Trey Lance conversation comes in, because Jimmy Garoppolo, it's like a floor ceiling situation, right? Like Jimmy Garoppolo probably has a higher floor and a lower ceiling. And so that's where the conversation comes back to everything else around him. Do you feel like you have the weapons and the rest of the roster that can actually make a run if he just does, if he's kind of an average to above average quarterback and you get what you're expecting, which is consistently middle of the road, whereas Trey Lance is going to have a lower floor, perhaps it might just completely fall out. He might make the mistakes. Though I think his turnover worthy play rate is essentially the same as Jimmy Garoppolo on the season, according to PFF's numbers. But it feels like his big time throw rate, all that kind of stuff, he gives you a higher ceiling.
He does.
So if you're looking to go on a run and you're okay with the rookie maybe losing a game for you, if you don't think that you would win those games anyway, then maybe you go with the ceiling, the high ceiling guy, and you just go, you know, go for it. Cause how are you going to beat Tom Brady? How are you going to beat, although the Bucs are kind of falling apart at the seams, but they still have Tom Brady. But then how are you going to beat that Cowboys offense if they can get off this roller coaster and actually look the way that we expect them to look, which has been inconsistent? How are you going to beat Aaron Rodgers? How are you going to beat some of these teams in the NFC? And I think you almost need that wild card out of San Francisco. I'm not sure if the team without him is good enough.
Yeah. Well, they're not with Garoppolo. They're not good enough to make a run with Garoppolo. And I think this goes back to your original point on the talent that they have around him, right? Like to not make the playoffs with George Kittle, with Debo Samuel, Debo Samuel becoming one of the best receivers in the NFL.
Slash running backs.
Yeah. There's a Niner fan out there that made a t-shirt that it says, WRB1, right? Wide receiver one, RB1.
Yep.
With Trent Williams being exactly what you thought he was, one of the best left tackles in the NFL, with a run game that even though it has had a kind of a rotating cast, has been really good. Elijah Mitchell's been one of the best as a rookie, even though we battled some injuries, been one of the best running backs in the NFL this year. So Kyle Juszczyk, I mean, like it's almost, especially offensively, their defensive line has been fantastic. Nick Bosa has been fantastic, right? So for that group to not make the playoffs, and then to your point, to not make the playoffs because a group with Taysom Hill at quarterback, no Michael Thomas, an undrafted second-year wide receiver, Marquez Callaway, as its leading receiver, Alvin Kamara this year, for a variety of reasons, you know, injury part of it, has a 60% reduction in his touchdowns over last year.
And, they've been missing both of their tackles for like half the season.
Yes. I mean, it's been a complete mess. Mm-hmm. And a credit to Sean Payton. But this goes back to what I said. Like, the Niners have put themselves in this position. It's hard to feel sorry for them. And part of the reason they're in this position is because Jimmy Garoppolo's floor, I think, is lower than sometimes you might think it is. And I think we saw that in the Titans game on Thursday night. After, you know, some people thought, oh, maybe the Niners are rolling a little bit, they lost a game that I think they should have won. And it was because of the only way, and I said this going into that game, the only way they're going to lose that game was if Garoppolo throws interceptions or makes mistakes. And he threw an end zone turnover and then another one in the second half. But so I think
that one game's been kind of an anomaly for him, though, in the second half of the season, right? Like statistically, I know if you look at his full season, his stats come down a lot or go up a lot, I guess, if you throw out the first few games where it was just kind of a shit show. And then he got better. And so they go on a run and he's kind of consistently like what you expect from him. And then there was that one game where the bottom fell out again.
Yeah. But I think that's the pattern. Like, we don't have a lot of historical pattern on Garoppolo because he hasn't really played that much consistently, but that is the pattern. You know, there are some things that happen. When they happen, you think they're going to keep happening. And then there are some things that happen when they happen, you think, well, they can't possibly keep going at this rate. And I would say Garoppolo, that's a non-scientific analysis, falls into that category of, you go, okay, the other shoe is going to drop at some point. And you're right.
We only accept a scientific analysis on this show, guys. Well, so if you could just be better moving forward.
There is a lot of statistical analysis that says Garoppolo at times was playing like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm here to tell you he's not one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL by like a top 10 margin, right? He is absolutely, I think sometimes, particularly in the Niner circles, in terms of, you know, just everyone watching him every second that he plays, the analysis goes a little too far the other way. Like, he is absolutely an NFL starter. But the mistakes that we see from him in the worst moments sometimes, and he makes some big moment plays as well. There's no question. There's just I don't think he chokes. I just think there is an inconsistency with him that sometimes shows up in a bad spot. Those things are real. That's part of, I think, what he is as an NFL quarterback, which is what most guys are.
Is there a consistent pattern when you watch the games that explains why he is inconsistent? Is he inconsistent in consistent ways? Kind of a weird question, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think the more he throws, I think he will make mistakes if he throws the football a lot. Like, the more he throws, the harder to protect.
That's what you want to say about your quarterback.
But I think I think the position is so hard and the vast majority of guys are not quote unquote elite at it. And we're talking about trying to, you know, the franchise trying to win a Super Bowl. Although that's not what the case is this year. But yeah, I think he's not a very good downfield thrower. And I think he's not great outside the numbers. And so what that makes the 49ers, to compare them to an NBA team, is a team that doesn't hit a lot of three-pointers. You know, I think a lot of their offense has to come from, even though they have elite players, it comes from design. And I think that's really difficult. Imagine your NBA team doesn't hit threes. Well, how many really good play? You have to run a lot of really good set plays then over the course of a game to score enough if the other team can hit three-pointers. And a three-point shot can just be a way in the NFL. It just is a way to make up yards. It's a way to make up deficits. It's a way to avoid having to do A, B, C, D. I think when you watch the Niners offensively, one of the reasons they look so fantastic when they're clicking on offense is because it usually takes like 7 or 9 or 10 or 11 plays. And so there's a rhythm that gets created with them that is, it's really impressive. It's a testament to Kyle Shanahan's play calling. It's a testament to the individual plays that guys like Debo Samuel or George Kittle can make. Mm-hmm. But I think it also opens you up to errors when your drives have to be so orchestrated, as opposed to, you know what, we can just make it for a couple of mistakes by heaving it down the field to, you know, because our quarterback can do that.
There's Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, F it.
And I think
he's going to make the play.
Exactly. And I think the drafting of Trey Lance was an acknowledge. I think Kyle Shanahan, like a lot of coaches, and you've heard coaches say this. I talked to one offensive play caller the other day, a college coach, who said this: if we just run the plays that I tell them to run, we're going to be really good. But the game happens. Like, there's 22 human beings running around on the field, bouncing off each other, right? One thing happens, there's a butterfly effect. And I think, you know, Kyle Shanahan drafting Trey Lance is an acknowledgement. And it goes back to losing the Super Bowl to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Like, I can drop a million great plays, but at the end of the day, the guy holding the football has to make some plays too. And drafting Trey Lance was an acknowledgement that sometimes you just need somebody to go out there and make a play. I mean, Josh Allen's a great example of this, right?
Totally.
And that's generally not what happens in the 49ers offense. The 49ers offense has to be very tightly orchestrated with small margins for error. And one error can throw the whole thing out of whack. And I think we see that a lot.
The other thing that Trey brings to the table in a playoff scenario is that I think he makes things a lot more complicated for the defense. And this is an offense that's already has built-in ways to make things complicated for a defense, right? In terms of the way that they use various personnel and the creativity in terms of the play calling. But Trey adds that extra element of, like, the defense is like, I don't know what they're going to do. And for better or for worse, I guess the fact that they have used him so infrequently this year, that exists maybe even more than it would otherwise. Because there's not a lot of tape.
Yeah, and partly because it exists for Kyle Shanahan also. Like, the rub, right, is that Kyle, and he has said it this year, like, he didn't quite know early on. The reason we haven't seen Trey Lance for people that haven't watched the Niners, there hasn't been a lot of this, like, Trey Lance on the goal line gets a play, right? They haven't done really any of that, except early in the year they did it once or twice. And part of the reason Kyle Shanahan explained is that when the quarterback changes, the defense changes, and now he doesn't get the same patterns from the defense that he's, right, used to seeing. But what that does, to your point, is it then creates a defense that is unsure of what Kyle Shanahan is going to do. Mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity here. If they beat the Rams or if the Saints lose, and Kyle Shanahan then heads into the playoffs with two Trey Lance games under his belt, that you get what we've gotten in the past with you know, now you don't get it as much, I think, with zone read type quarterbacks that can do that. Where defenses early on didn't really, you know, early on in like the Colin Kaepernick type era, didn't quite know what to get. And then they adjust and then you have to adjust back. But you could get that little sweet spot early where teams don't quite know what to expect from Trey Lance. Although defenses on a more fundamental level now are just more prepared for, you know, like zone read type, RPO type stuff. You could hit kind of a sweet spot there where you take a big jump forward, maybe ahead of where you actually are just because of the lack of predictability with Trey Lance. And I think the other thing that's great, I think one of the things that has me really optimistic about him, if you watch him and if you get the chance to watch him Sunday, watch for this. He really, for a mobile guy, does not break the pocket to run. He breaks the pocket to throw. Now, sometimes he doesn't get the ball out as quickly as Garoppolo does. And Adam Archuleta said that during the broadcast last week. And it was clear, you know, I think I take that, as you know, something said early in a broadcast, probably something the coach told you about a player, right? He doesn't get the ball out as quickly as Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that probably comes from coaches' meetings, right? I think it's, I don't want to assume that, but it's.
I think we saw right a coaches' meeting on display on Monday Night Football, right? Like all of the, I think this is going to be the last one for Ben Roethlisberger. Yes. If it's going to be like that was all, anyway.
Did the NFL know that game was going to, did that game get scheduled week 17 Monday Night Football for a reason? Or is that too, is it just Brown Steelers could be a good game?
Really good game. Yeah. That was a barn burner from a football standpoint.
You know, I think that there was some truth in some of that stuff about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? He sees stuff very quickly. He knows what's supposed to do. But Trey Lance, even though sometimes he might exit the pocket a little quickly, his goal when he exits the pocket is not to run. It is to, he takes a lot of time trying to throw the ball. And I think that's a fantastic quality for a mobile quarterback.
So against the Rams this week, you know, divisional opponent, weird things happen. How do you think the Niners, how do you see them matching up against Los Angeles?
Well, I, you know, again, the first part of that is who plays quarterback.
Let's say it's Trey.
Yeah. I mean, it's, so that brings a little complication. But historically it's, they match up well. Hey, Kyle Shanahan, the one, like there's this, it's been less of a debate over the last couple of years, McVay or Shanahan. McVay's done a fantastic job. There's not a debate. That's not some, you know, I'm saying what everybody else says, but Shanahan's done a really good job against him. The Rams have not beaten the 49ers since 2018. That's the incredible. 49ers have won five straight games over the Rams, despite the fact that the Niners have been kind of, haven't been, well, I guess they were good in 19, but they weren't great in 20. And obviously this year they beat him as well. So, you know, is it hard to beat a team six times? I think it hurts the Niners that the Rams have something to play for here, but I think they,
in terms of seeding,
yeah.
And the division,
The Rams can win the division, which is pretty impressive considering, you know, what it looked, the Cardinals looking like they had a stranglehold on the division, but I think they match up well. I think the concern is, I don't know why, if you're a team running offense against the Niners, you would do anything but throw the ball downfield. Their cornerbacks, although improving, have been this year a pass interference waiting to happen repeatedly. I mean, everybody that watches the Niners knows if there's an incomplete pass downfield, you still wait 3 seconds to see if there's a flag. And the Rams have the ability to push the ball down the field. Maybe Odell settling.
We think. I mean, but last week I was like, hey, this Ravens secondary admittedly, you know, got Jimmy Smith back. And so it wasn't quite the secondary that we'd seen the week before, but I thought this is Stafford and Kupp waiting to go crazy. And then it just didn't. And so there's a little bit of a roller coaster involved with Matthew Stafford. You know, if he turns the ball over a time or two, then maybe he'll be perfect in the second half to get him back in the game. But how deep of a hole will he put him in before then? I mean, I think that they're a question mark because they're one of those teams that should be able to take advantage of that. Yes. But I thought that last week too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think six picks in the last three games.
Oof.
But you know, the Niners throw you the ball too. So I think what's impressive about the Rams, I give them credit. Not that they're playing, they've won every game. They've won those last three games, despite the fact that he has six interceptions. The Niners, now they beat the Texans with a pick last week, but the Niners do not this year win games when their quarterbacks throw picks. In fact, when they don't throw picks, they win. And when they throw picks, they lose. It's almost been, I think the only I think the only exception to that might be the Texans game this last week and the Lions game week one. For the most part, with Garoppolo, it's been throws picks, loses, doesn't throw picks, wins. Now, if the Niners get some, which has not been their strength, then maybe that takes care of itself. But because of what I said about the way the 49ers offense is, they just can't afford to give possessions away. So, you know, it's a very common opponent. I think the Niners benefit from what you just described, kind of the instability at quarterback. They did a great job historically against Goff because he wasn't mobile. And again, their defensive line, in addition to Bosa, has been really, really good, really good. And they kind of need them to protect their secondary. But you know, they've won five of these games in a row. I don't think that's nothing. And I would give them they got a shot. What'd you say the number is on this game? 3.5?
4.5.
4.5. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's doable. It's that'll be a fun game. You know, I can't say with a great, well, you can't say anything with a great degree of certainty this year in the NFL, but I don't know what's going to happen there in the afternoon window. And one of the, I think, more intriguing games of the weekend because of what's at stake there for both teams in this situation. Over on the AFC side, I think the game that is probably the best game of the week, though there is a scenario where it turns out not to be, is the Chargers Raiders, which is the primetime game. And the one game that looks like it could be a win and you're in, lose and go home type of game. There is a scenario where if the Jaguars beat the Colts, that maybe that changes.
Don't laugh like that. I mean, the Colts haven't won in Jacksonville since 2014.
I think that's incredible considering how bad Jacksonville has been. I don't understand that. But I also don't see it happening. I just cannot see a scenario where the Colts are playing to get into the postseason and the Jacksonville Jaguars that just got like run up and down there. I mean, that game against the Patriots was gross. That was embarrassing. The whole season's been embarrassing. If they end this year of all teams by knocking a team out of the postseason, what? No.
Ugh. Well, I mean, they kind of killed the Colts last year, right? Indianapolis lost week one to them. And I got to go back and double. I mean, they were 11-5. They did beat them week 17 last year, but they lost week one to them. And that game hung around all year for them. So, no, I don't see it either.
Imagine. And then that sets up a situation where, like, neither team in the primetime game that we're all excited to sit down and watch with so much at stake, neither team has anything to play for. They're both in
a double tie. They could play for the tie. No. And I'm sorry, that game didn't kill Indianapolis in the end last year because they did make the playoffs, but it was close because remember Miami was 10-6. So it almost came back. Indianapolis made the playoffs at 11-5. It almost came back to bite them. Miami with the fact that they lost to Jacksonville anyway.
Okay, I am willing to assume for purposes of this conversation and the excitement agreed. That I want to see on Sunday that the Colts Jaguars are not a game that is going to affect this scenario. So I choose to believe that Chargers Raiders is going to be a win and you're in, lose and go home type of game because that's a lot more fun. So, yes. And also it's, you know, like Rams Niners, like, I don't know. I don't have a feeling one way or the other. I think that the Chargers are the better team. That said, I wrote off the Raiders several weeks ago and the Raiders are in this situation. So I kind of feel like maybe I just don't have my finger on the pulse of what the Raiders have going on there because on paper, offensively, I just don't think that they should be in this mix, but they have found a way to win some of these games in the last few weeks to stay in this mix. And so I don't feel comfortable writing them off, especially against a Chargers team that while I think is far superior in terms of talent, I'm coaching all of it right now. We haven't seen consistency from them. So I think that the Chargers are the better team and the Chargers can do some damage in the postseason where, again, I don't think that the Raiders are that. I don't know that I feel comfortable just writing off the Raiders going into that game, especially the rivalry situation and the divisional matchup. And who knows?
Yeah. I don't think you should feel comfortable writing them off. You know, I've written the Raiders off three times this year. So let me learn from my lessons.
Welcome to my club.
I thought they were toast after mm-hmm. they lost on Sunday night or on a Sunday to the Bengals, got roasted. And then they were going to go play the Cowboys on a short week on Thanksgiving. I thought there was no chance. And obviously they won that game in spectacular fashion. I did not think they were going to go to Indianapolis and win this week, especially once Wentz was back. And they did. And they did it. You know, Derek Carr has never played in a playoff game. The Raiders have played in one playoff game in the Derek Carr era, and he was injured for that game. Connor Cook, I think, started that game. So the way he played, I mean, they played in a playoff level game against Indianapolis, and he made, I mean, some massive plays in that game, some huge throws, some winning play. Even though we threw two picks, I thought it was really a testament to Derek Carr that they won that game. It really is a testament to the whole, everything they've been through.
Yeah.
This year, Henry Ruggs, Gruden. And now they have another player this week with a DUI. But here's what they get. They get potentially, I think the thing to watch is, do they get Darren Waller back? Darren Waller was hurt.
Huge.
Then he was on the COVID list. I think Rich Bisaccia said Tuesday that we'll see Wednesday if he can get back to practice. That would be a big deal for them. They've just got something going right now through everything that is really impressive. Hunter Renfrow has been really good. They feel to me, as crazy as this sounds, almost a little more predictable than the Chargers are, because this is maybe, you know, my own, I'm projecting here. I don't think the Raiders should be better than they are. I think the Chargers should be better than they are.
Yes.
And so in some ways I almost treat them more harshly. You know, they're in this position because they lost to the Texans.
Yeah.
When they were, I think, a 10.5-point favorite a couple of weeks ago. I'm very pro Herbert, but
very.
You know, we have crowned the Chargers before they've really earned anything. And, you know, if they were to lose this week, what would they be? 9-8? Anthony Lynn's going like, okay, I could have done that. Like, are you guys really? Like, this is, Herbert was good when I had him. So I think it'd be a massive, massive letdown for them, given the position that they were in. And I think the Raiders have to be playing. It's easy for me to say this. I don't know if they feel this way, but to me, there's a lot of pressure on the Chargers.
Oh yeah.
The Raiders are
house money. Yep. No one expected.
I didn't want to say house money, but house money. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree. Cause everyone wrote them off. Everybody did. I mean, it's not that I dislike the Raiders. I want the Raiders to, you know, Mike Mayock is a friend of mine. I want there to be success. It was just from a pure football analysis standpoint. Once you took Henry Ruggs out of the mix, Gruden, okay, fine. Like that's a lot to metabolize in a locker room. but just from a pure X's and O's standpoint, I think taking Henry Ruggs out of the mix and then not using Zay Jones the way that they've been using him in the last couple of weeks, or Bryan Edwards, like those guys, DeSean Jackson, they never really went to them consistently. So you didn't have that stretch the field guy. I just thought there was too much in the same area of the field, and then it becomes really predictable. And that's kind of my concern, honestly. If they get Darren Waller back this week, that's massive because he's hugely talented. You want your best players on the field. I just hope that it doesn't draw targets away from Zay Jones, because I think that they need that element of their game in order to be competitive in these games moving forward. And if you just go Jacobs, who's been so good lately, and then Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller, and those are the guys that you're kind of focusing on because they're your best guys, then it all kind of gets a lot more like a passing chart that looks like what Ben Roethlisberger put on paper on Monday night.
Ben had three throws downfield. They just weren't completed.
I mean, it was a thing of beauty looking at that passing chart.
That was something.
How do you throw that many times for that low a passing yardage total? It's just gorgeous, and get the win. But regardless, that's kind of my thing is like, and I know Raiders fans have been frustrated in years past about the ADOT conversation and that being attributed to Derek Carr. I think this year has nothing to do with Derek Carr. It has to do with the way that the roster is constructed, where their strengths lied once they lost Henry Ruggs. I think that loss was massive. I love the way that they've incorporated Zay Jones in the last couple of weeks. And I think that kind of changes things a little bit moving forward. It's that little element, like, can he be that guy? Okay, now we're talking, you know, because it opens things up for the guys who are your playmakers a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage.
I think Derek Carr trusts him a lot. And I think we've seen that all year long, even before the Ruggs absence or issue. And loss, probably the best word for it. But I think Carr trusts him a lot. I think it's a legitimate concern. I don't think Waller coming back would keep. I think Carr likes to throw the ball down the field. Do you know why Carr likes throwing the ball down the field? Because he's good at it. Most people like to do things they're good at. We know this. Derek has a really good arm.
Yeah.
He's got a fantastic arm. I've never met a fast person that doesn't want to run. And I think Derek does want to throw the ball down the field. And I think with Zay Jones, he has a guy that he trusts to do it. I think what's impressive with Derek is, you're right, we've spent so much time talking about Carr statistically. And I went to Fresno State. I was working in media in Fresno when Derek was there. I've watched his entire, every game he's ever played, I've watched. Trust me, go watch some of the Fresno State Devontae Adams tape. He loves throwing the ball down the field. It's been such a statistical conversation with him for so many years, exactly to the point you made. And I think what's made this stretch run so impressive, it's not been about anything pretty. It's been about him in big moments making big plays against Cleveland, against Denver, against Indianapolis. And that's really, I mean, no one goes back to Tom Brady's, like, you know, first Super Bowl run statistical game log and goes, oh, I don't know. You know, I remember this differently now that I see he only threw for 201 yards, but it was about making plays in big moments. And I think Derek's not been in a lot of those big moments, like those postseason bright lights, everybody's watching type of moments. And this is another one for him on Sunday. And I think it's been really impressive what he's done this year. It's not going to go down as his, you know, is an MVP season relative to some of the other years. But if they win Sunday night, I think it will be the year that Derek Carr crossed over into a new realm, you know? And I think that would be significant for the Raiders. And it, for a few years now, it's been like, is he good enough to extend? Is he good enough? He says he'll never play for another team. How much are they going to pay him? Do they have the money? Different variations, some that have been focused on him and some that have been focused on the Raiders. But I think they answer a lot of questions.
Well, this takes us in a different direction, but the conversation a few weeks ago was kind of looking at the Raiders roster and saying like, I don't know, this needs a lot of work. Maybe we should trade Derek Carr, having nothing to do with Derek Carr. It's not an indictment of Derek Carr. It's almost an indictment on the roster and saying like, this, we can get something for him because there are so many quarterback needy teams. If you go to the postseason, if you win a game in the postseason, if Derek Carr actually is one of the reasons that that happens, then does that bring you back to a weird position where now all of a sudden you can't get rid of Derek Carr because that feels weird, but you do still need a lot of work with regard to the roster because we both look at them and we think they're kind of playing a little bit over their heads.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this team was going to win 9 games this year. That was my prediction. And, you know, they've got a chance to make the playoffs, which is more significant than the number of games you win. I think it would hurt to not make the playoffs this year. No doubt. I think it would be impressive to make the playoffs in this AFC this year. Because you have to be a good team to make the playoffs in the AFC this year. So I've never been a big believer that they should move on from Derek. I think above average to really good quarterbacks are very, very, very hard to find. If I were Seattle, I'd be more interested in trying to find a way to get Russell Wilson better than trying to trade him to the Giants for their first round picks. I think they're really hard. Now I know it well. You know it. I've got a couple buddies, Raider fans, that they text what you just described. Like in one game, I'm getting both sides of that. Right, one guy, the same guy, early in the game, we've got to get rid of him. End of the game, 10 years, $300 million. Let's pay him.
Totally.
I think it's real. I think Derek has above average skills and has been in a below average situation for his career. And that's just the fact that he's been in several different situations. Even if you think this situation is better than the other situations, I think he's been in, just by nature of being unstable situations, it has not been great. So I'm not pro trade Derek. Unless it's like, well, you're trading him and you're getting Aaron Rodgers. Okay, fine. But yes, pro that. But for the most part, how are you upgrading? Because you've got a brand new stadium. I don't think you're interested in doing like a 3-year rebuild. I would bet everything that Mark Davis is not interested in doing that, or a 2-year rebuild, or searching for your next quarterback. So, you know, I don't put him in the same category as Baker. It's like, what do you do with the extension? Like, I think Derek's better. And oh, yes. I think it's an easier decision, right? And so I would keep him. I wouldn't trade him unless I'm trading him for Aaron Rodgers. or old Russell, or not, you know, better Russ, the older version of Russell Wilson, maybe. But there's no guarantee you're doing that. So I think they're, I think if I'm a coach considering that job, is Derek Carr a reason to take it or a reason not to take it? I think he's a reason to take it.
100%. And maybe they don't need as much as we thought they did. A few weeks ago, the defense is playing pretty well. Denzel Perryman did things to Quentin Nelson last week that you do not see people to do to Nelson very often.
I think they've shored up some of their issues on defense. They have. They were a bad defensive team, and they've gotten better on defense.
Well, we'll see how it goes this weekend against the Chargers. Oh, and I can't wait. Cross your fingers what will be a win and get in, lose and go home type of
but
game.
Then you want, but it's like, God, you want to see Herbert also. I love the tie and get in game. That would be a fascinating game.
Actually, yeah, because those are the two teams I would actually rather see in the postseason. Though Jonathan Taylor is kind of fun, right? In a postseason situation where you've got a run game. Herbert and the explosiveness that offense has. I mean, Burrow and Herbert, that's going to be a conversation for years. That's fun. And I think it's funny to see the fact that we've kind of gone back and forth on them as the season goes on. It's like, oh, Herbert, clearly the guy, that was the guy in the class and everything else is wrong. And then now these last few weeks, it's Burrow clearly is the guy. And so we have a lot of recency bias happening. The thing that we can say with a great deal of certainty is that both of those guys are franchise quarterbacks moving forward. They're both great. Let's continue this conversation for the next decade and have fun with that. The thing about Herbert that I love is you get into third and long and he's outstanding, right? Like one of the best quarterbacks in the whole league statistically on third down. You don't want to be in a third and long, but if you're the Chargers and you're in a third and long, you still feel okay about that situation because he can just like whoop right downfield, prettiest ball you've ever seen, straight to the end zone, 70
which
yards.
Was one of the questions. Like they were good. He was good last year. How is that? Could that possibly sustain? Mm-hmm. And it has, but I think what you said was a very hard question to answer, which is if you had to pick two of the three, Raiders, Colts, Chargers from an entertainment value, the argument I would make for the Colts is I think Carson, given his history, right, his Super Bowl ring came on Nick Foles' team, I think would make that really interesting. Mm. And the fact that if you watch the Colts every week, like a lot of people do, you know that once a game he tries a two-handed overhead pass. And a left-handed pass. Usually he does both of those each game, which is just a moment. It's definitely a moment.
Yeah. I think I'm going to stick with the Raiders and Chargers personally and let Jonathan Taylor be in the MVP conversation and let the Raiders be like the Cinderella story that everybody is kind of like, can they do it? I don't know. And let the Chargers be that upstart that could beat anybody on a given day, but also lose to anybody on a given day. That's a lot of fun in the postseason. Guy, this has been fun for me. Thank you so much for your time.
Always, Lindsay. Good to talk to you.
Guy Haberman, that's his name. That's his Twitter handle also. And you can find the Haberman and Middlecoff podcast wherever you get your podcasts. They're also up on YouTube. Coming up next, one of my very favorite people who's probably not enjoying his favorite season. It's been a rough one for his former team, the New York Football Giants. Sean O'Hara is with us next.
What is up, everyone? It's Jeff Ratcliff, the host of the Rant Podcast. Join me weekdays for my unique brand of insight and analysis that will help you crush your fantasy football leagues and DFS contests. I'm also bringing you the sharpest betting angles, unique parlays, and the need-to-know info that helps put units in your pocket. The Rant, the fantasy football podcast that's on every winning lineup. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts or listen on the SXM app, free for most subscribers.
Sean O'Hara, welcome to the show. It's so good to see your face.
Hi, Lindsay. Happy New Year. Here's to 2022. Hopefully, a whole new year of new and exciting adventures. And hopefully, a lot more of them are maskless and in person as a remote.
Oh my gosh, from your lips. So, Sean, before we get into things, I have to tell you really quick. Our producer, Andrew Emmer, is a massive Giants fan and told me right before you came on that he owned a Sean O'Hara jersey.
Wow. Wow. Andrew, that's awesome. My first question to you is, what do you mean past tense, owned?
Oh, yeah. I put the past tense. Like
I don't know where it is. I will say I don't know where it is right now.
Oh, you don't wear it to games still, Andrew?
I haven't been to a game in a while, I have to admit. It's been a little hard to justify spending that money for a while. But and I will say it was a very knockoff jersey. I did not buy it from the team store. I think I probably bought it in the parking lot of Giant Stadium during probably the first Super Bowl run. And I had a jersey of Sean O'Hara, Eli Manning, and Jeff Feagles. Those are my three jerseys.
Well, I tell you what, you might have been up in Albany with us in training camp because those were my two roommates in camp, Feagle and Eli. And let me tell you, we had some good times after bed check, the three of us. So that explains maybe why you have those three. I'll say this. I'm very flattered that you have an O'Hara jersey. Usually it's just like family members that have the O-line jersey. When you're an O-lineman, you kind of just get used to that. But I also, I feel even extra flattered the fact that you have a knockoff. I feel like, you know, there's a saying that imitation is the highest form of flattery. Like, you've made it if you have a knockoff of, like, whatever brand you are, right? Lindsay, you know about this a little bit. Like, all right, New York City, you go down to Canal Street, and, like, if your brand is on Canal Street, like, you know you've made it.
Do, did they make Sean O'Hara jerseys like through NFL shop? Like, was that one that, or can you always buy anybody's? You just decide the name. I don't know how this works.
It's a complicated answer, Lindsay. Okay. And for a number of reasons. Number one, you could always get official game worn or official jerseys through your equipment manager, depending on how good your Christmas bonus was with them.
No, like you could, but a fan couldn't.
On NFLshop.com, yes, you could go get an O'Hara jersey. Here is the challenge. When you have an apostrophe in your last name, NFL Shop knows, they have no idea what to do with an apostrophe. Like, I've had so many people hit me up, hey, I tried to order your jersey and the apostrophe just like wrecks everything. My whole order got canceled.
No.
So you've got to like eliminate the apostrophe and just go straight O'Hara. But yeah, you can buy them on there. And you know what? You've got to want it. So even now to this day, like if you walk around and you see an O-lineman's jersey, you're like, all right. Is that a family member? Did that guy lose a bet? No, he's super fan. I love it. And you got to go right up. So, Andrew, I'll happily sign your jersey anytime.
Yay!
If I find it, I will take you up on that.
Whoa, dude, Andrew, just be like, yes, I will find it. Like, he just offered to sign your jersey.
I will find it. I promise.
Don't make this hard for him. Like, if I get time.
But, you know what, Andrew? Let's just hope that next year you will willingly and proudly be donning all three of those jerseys at some point during the season.
Or maybe there will be Giants players that you feel so inclined to go out and buy their jerseys that are active players. How close are we to that? Sean O'Hara. So obviously talking to Andrew, Andrew's a little bit frustrated, it sounds like, with the Giants and maybe what he's seen on the field so far this year and the direction that they're going in. What is the kind of feedback that you get? Because I know that you're around the team a lot. You also live in the area. So you get a lot of Giants fans coming up to you to talk to you about the team. What's the you know, most consistent thing that you hear when you're just out in the community?
Yeah, Lindsay, probably the number one thing that I hear right now, and you know, it's kind of comical but sad, is are you coming back to play? Like, can you suit back up? Now, mind you,
have they seen how skinny you are?
I mean, yeah, I'm not 305 pounds anymore like I used to. So the fact that they're even asking me to suit up now at 230 pounds is a little bit head scratching, but. That's just where Giants fans are right now. I feel like they are just so beat down right now and so disappointed. It's been a tough year. And look, in earlier in the season, there were some losses that they took that were heartbreaking. And early losses can sometimes really dictate, you know, how your team feels about itself in November and December. But right now, Giants Nation, I feel like for the last month, I have been a New York Giants psychologist. And it's every time Giants fans come up, give me something to cling to. Give me something to hold on to as a Giants fan so I'm not losing my jerseys like Andrew, so that I'm not like finding other things to do with my Sundays. Because that's really the challenge is, you know, even on Fan Appreciation Day where they're handing out free Pepsis, nobody wants it. Nobody wants that. That's like, you know, it's almost insulting to them. And it's insulting to ask Giants fans to continually root for a dysfunctional team. And I think that's the theme that I see outside. That's the outside public opinion. Now, when I go inside the building, obviously things are different now, Lindsay. You know, 2 years ago, I would talk to players. I'd go in the cafeteria, see the coaches. There's much more banter. Now it's like you go in the building, you're allowed to be in this room. You can't go in there. And so it's like, man, you just feel so disconnected from the team. I can't imagine how these players feel, even amongst their own teams. The meetings are virtual. This is how they're holding team meetings now. Like, just think about that from a team chemistry standpoint, how hard that is, not just the Giants, but every team. Like, my favorite point in the day was hot tub, cold tub, eating with the guys, breakfast, lunch, you know, weight room, that camaraderie. That's how you build all that chemistry. These players don't even have that. So it's been really hard to kind of get that feeling, like, what are these players like? What are the coaches like? But the people that I have had a chance to talk to on, you know, in different platforms, this is a different team than what we saw 2 years ago from a culture standpoint, but it's not the same team. It's not a different team from an execution standpoint. And I know this is a long-winded answer to your question. A lot of people say right now, you know, we got a clean house. What would you do? Who are you hiring? Who are you firing? I've never been one to stand up here and say, fire this guy, like fire this coach. Those guys have families. Those guys put in their heart and soul. Like, nobody's wearing these losses harder than the Maras, the Tishes, and Joe Judge and the staff. So, but I always blame players more so than anything. Lindsay, you and I spent a lot of time together talking about football, and like a parent, like you are, and like I am, I'm trying to get my 8-year-old son to put his lunchbox away and hang his coat up every single day that he comes home from school. And you know what? In a 5-day week, he maybe does it 2 out of those 5 days. Those other 3 days, I look at him and I say, what's the issue here? Like, I'm telling you what to do. You're not doing it. So am I a bad parent or is he a bad kid? You know, it's probably somewhere in between, but it's the execution. I know I've taught him how to do it. I've showed him how to do it. He knows what to do. He's not doing it. So the players are not doing it. Even this Monday morning here after week 17, I turn on the film and I see like players not blocking the protections correctly. I see quarterbacks not making the right reads. I see guys, running backs missing holes and things that shouldn't be happening to a team in week 17. I put it all on players first, and then I go to the coaching second.
Well, so in the front office is also involved in all of this, right? And we're talking about them at this time of year in terms of who gets to come back, who should come back, all that kind of stuff. They're in charge of picking who the players are. So if the players aren't executing, then to a certain degree, you know, you kind of point the finger at like, maybe we need to get different people to pick different players.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, they're going to reevaluate that entire process. And to your point, I look at the Giants roster and I'll be honest with you, this offseason for the Giants, the focus was offense, right? It was production. Who can we sign? They bring in Kenny Golladay. They signed John Ross. They brought in Kyle Rudolph. It was all about who can we bring in, Kadarius Toney, to give this offense some life. So with all those pieces, it was, wow, you know what? This offense can really look totally different. Kenny Golladay, 0 touchdowns this year. Kadarius Toney, I don't think he has a touchdown yet, and he hasn't played in weeks. Kyle Rudolph.
He's been in and out, yeah.
All these players, John Ross has 1 touchdown. We've got an offensive lineman, Andrew Thomas, that has just as many touchdowns as a lot of the wide receivers, which is mind-boggling. So I look at that standpoint and I say, okay, the general managers and the people that made the decision, they brought in players that had production elsewhere, and it didn't turn out. So, I think they both shoulder the blame for that. And there have been misses by both Dave Gettleman and the scouting staff. But I also look at it like you can't just look at, it's like when you go to Vegas, right? You can't just say, oh, you only count when you win. Like, there are losses too. There's times when you get your head kicked in. You've got to account for all that. There are players that they have hit on as well. And there have been good players that they brought in. I think Andrew Thomas has been their best offensive lineman. I think he's become their cornerstone left tackle for the future. I think Xavier McKinney, who they got as a steal as a second round last year, has been phenomenal. I even think guys that they brought in like Blake Martinez has been phenomenal. He got hurt. He's, you know, you lose your captain, your middle linebacker. That's not on the GM. Blake Martinez never missed a game in his life. You know, Saquon Barkley, obviously that's going to be one that Dave Gettleman, you know, takes to the grave with him. I don't blame Dave Gettleman for Saquon getting hurt. The guy had never been hurt in college. Dave Gettleman also drafted Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, listen, everybody drafted him as the number one pick in almost every fantasy draft. And you know what? He got hurt. It's not the GM's fault when a player gets hurt. So there's two sides to that coin. I do think that the Giants, Dave Gettleman was a short-term fix, given his age, given the situation they were in with transitioning from Jerry Reese. They never viewed Dave Gettleman as a long-term solution. So is this the time when I think when they go out and find that long-term answer? I think there's plenty of opportunity for that to, for this to be that time. And I think there are plenty of reasons for that to go that direction. You know, if people ask me about Joe Judge, what I think about him, my answer is this. There are a lot of reasons to keep Joe. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's really good at developing the team and how they're going to go about things during the week and how it hasn't translated onto the game field. But when I see the way that the team responds to him,
they do.
There's hope. Yeah, I think that this is a totally different locker room than we saw a couple of years ago. The players respect Joe Judge, and they have learned a lot from him. And I think, like any NFL player will tell you, if the coach is going to teach me techniques on how to win, like, don't correct me. Like, to me, coaching is teaching a player how to do something right, not telling them what they did wrong after the fact. Anybody can stand up and say, oh, this is what you did wrong. Like, that's called correcting. Coaching is about teaching you how to do things the right way. And I think Joe Judge has a lot of that ability. The real thing for the Giants going forward is just offense. Like, that's where the focus needs to be. And how do they find a way to get some sort of production?
Yeah. And unfortunately, from top to bottom, you know, you mentioned a few names there, particularly on the offensive line, but like they look like a roster that's pretty far away everywhere else. Let me ask you about this. And then we can move on. The box score from Sunday, I thought was confusing. And I'm wondering if you can explain it to me, because they had 4 pass completions and 11 pass attempts and 40 rush attempts in a game where they lost by 26 points. So typically that game script would suggest that we need to take to the air. Understandably, Mike Glennon, Jake Fromm, who will be playing this week, these are not best case scenario quarterbacks, but still, don't you need to give your team a chance by putting it in the air when you're trailing by so much? What was the thought process there?
Yeah, it's a great question. And ironically, the Giants started off that game. The very first play of the game was empty formation pass that resulted in a sack, forced fumble that almost went to the house the other way. You know, if I'm an offensive lineman and I'm like, look, we're going to play in Chicago. Like, it's going to be windy. It's going to be cold. We're going to be playing the elements. We've got our backup quarterback in there. Maybe we don't start the game off with empty formation and just invite them to come hit our quarterback and to blitz somebody and force into a bet. Maybe we start the game off with a run or maybe 2 runs. That would be me, you know, standing on my chair on Saturday night saying, this is our first play. No, like we got to have a conversation. This is a young offensive line. So that conversation is not going to happen. You don't have guys that are willing to speak out like that. They also, you know, Billy Price, who was their backup center, who they traded for when Nick Gates broke his leg, Billy Price was out. So they were starting Matt Skura, who had been their left guard. They moved him over to center. So given that aspect too, I would say, look, we're going to be very conservative to start the game off with. We're not going to blow this game in the first quarter. Let's let Mike Glennon get some rhythm. So I didn't like the way the game started. And to your point, every time they tried to throw the ball, somebody either got beat or somebody didn't know who to block or somebody didn't know who was hot. And it was like, you know what? Like, this is going to hell in a handbag really quick. Like, let's not create any more fires. So, you know, at that point,
just wrap this up on the clock.
Like, don't stop the clock. Like, let's get going. Like, we got a plane to catch. You know what? I think that's kind of where it came.
Is that what he meant by we're a whole lot closer than we are farther away? Like, in terms of time, we're going to get this season done fast by running the clock. And we're going to get to 2022. We are closer.
Yeah, it's funny because they were a lot more concerned about getting off the field than they were off the podium. And I think that you just look at that, like, look, our offense is struggling. We've got a left guard in Wes Martin who's, you know, making I don't know how many starts he's had in his entire career, but like we're just not very functional offensively. Let's run the football. Let's play as basic of a game plan as you can play out there. And let's just try to find a way to get this game through.
Okay. Well, I know this conversation so far has been like a variation of torture for you, making you talk about the Giants in this fashion. So Let me hit on one of the notes from 2021 that I know has been good for you and people like you, Sean. You mentioned Andrew Thomas and his touchdown. More big man touchdowns this season than ever before. Taylor Decker's touchdown on Sunday, bringing the season total to 12. And I would like to go back in time with you.
Oh, boy.
To a moment where you too experienced said glory. 2001, September 23rd, Browns hosting the Lions, 13:30 left in the second quarter, roughly. Tim Couch comes into the huddle and he says what?
He says, oh, hero, you better get open. I'm coming to you. K4 all cross was the play call. And I was I wasn't starting at the time. So I was the extra offensive lineman. So it was like, you got to come in, you got to report as eligible, 60 is eligible. And I lined up as the backside tight end. And I tell you, the Moons were in alignment, Lindsay. This play, we ran in practice. And actually, so Bruce Arians, who I love to death, was our offensive coordinator. And he was a big fan of mine. He coached at Temple. I went to Rutgers. So we used to always have a little banter there. But he was a big part of my NFL career from a confidence standpoint. But I'll never forget when he put this play in, he's like, you know, we're going to try to get you a touchdown. And we ran the play one time in practice and Tim tried to throw me the ball and it was like 5 yards over my head. I wasn't open. I'm like, yeah, this is not happening. But when they called the play and I broke the huddle and Tim said, oh, hero, I'm coming to you, get open. I like had to hide my face as I walked to the line of scrimmage. Cause I'm like, don't let them see it. I'm smiling right now. Like, like I literally didn't look at anybody on the defense. I put my head down because I'm like, I know I'm going out for a pass. Like this, don't give it away.
Were you nervous? Were you giddy? Like, what was the whole vibe?
All of the above. All of the above. I was excited because number one, as a fat kid, you don't get to run routes, like, you know, and then like to know there's a small chance that this could happen. A little backstory: my parents were at the game. So they lived in New Jersey. So they drove out for the game. And I told my dad, hey, look, you know, I was a wedge captain on kickoff return. I said, and I'm also a part of the goal line and short yardage package. And he said, is there a pass play in that package? And I said, yeah. I said, there's no way they're going to call it. There's no way they're going to throw it to me. So all of that's like before the game. And then on a macro level, this was the first game back after 9/11. So 9/11 happened, we canceled the games, and then that was the first game back. So it was like a very emotional scene leading up to that whole game, as it was. And one of my best friends in college, Mike McMahon, was on the other sideline. He played for the Detroit Lions. He had gotten drafted. So there was all that going on leading up to the play. But as the ball was snapped, our fullback was the first read, Mike Sellers. He tripped and fell. So his defender fell off and covered Ricky Dudley, who was running the post corner. And so Couch looked at Mike Sellers. He was on the ground. Ricky Dudley covered. And then I saw his eyes scan to me. And I think that my heart stopped at that moment. I saw in the ball. The ball took about as long as this answer did to get to me. But it was a really cool moment. I wish we weren't wearing all white jerseys. I wish I had the brown jersey for the slimming effect. But it was a really cool moment.
Oh my gosh. Were you just like, hands don't drop ball?
You kind of like go like into like, don't think about it mode. Just let your body react. Like you got this. The ball was a little bit behind me, so I had to adjust, but.
Oh, so athletic, Sean.
Yeah, clearly. And then everybody comes over and celebrates and, you know, I'm like hyperventilating because I'm so excited. Oh, but then I'm like, I'm also on PAT. So like, I've got to like, I started running off the field and I'm like, oh shoot, I got to go back to PAT. So all of that it was pretty cool. You know, of course there was no Twitter, no social media back then. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the big kids touchdowns, the big man touchdowns this year. I've been educated on this now. Apparently this is a trend now and it has its own hashtag. It's called the thick six, T-H-I-C-C, thick six when a big man scores a touchdown. So, I wish I would have been part of the thick six crew, but, it's definitely a cool moment for a chubby kid.
Would you have like come up with a celebration that you had in your back pocket? Cause now obviously that's a thing, right? So
Yeah.
Be ready to go at a moment's notice.
No, I don't think that's appropriate. You know, look, Walter Payton was a big fan of mine, and he always acted like he'd been there before. Barry Sanders as well. No, I would have never done a celebration like on my, like, look at me. I would have done maybe, you know, celebrate with the teammates in a natural moment, but nothing like what Christian Wilkins did down in Miami when he scored his touchdown. He did the Lambeau leap into the stadium, and then he also did the worm. Like, it was clear that he had a whole plan mapped out.
Dude, go for it. He was called up from the practice squad this week. First ever NFL start. He goes nuts. 100% do all the celebrations. I have no problem with that. Just don't point at anyone now, because right, that's a fine and a penalty. And like, don't do that. So who is the best offensive line in the game this year?
Man, this is a good one. Early in the season, I thought the Saints were the best offensive line, you know, with Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead, and then they started to get banged up. So things have kind of morphed. And then really the offensive line that kind of came out of nowhere is the Chiefs offensive line, and just kind of seeing the way that they have played with so many new pieces. I don't know that it's ever happened in NFL history where a Super Bowl team, a team that goes to the Super Bowl, brings back five totally new starters the very next season.
Is that especially hurtful as a Giants fan now? Like, see, they did it in one off season anyway. Sorry.
Yeah. It kind of takes that whole narrative out. Well, it takes time to build an offensive line, you know, and they draft Creed Humphreys in the first round at center. Trey Smith has done a great job for them, a late round pick. Orlando Brown, you know, he was a converted right tackle over to left tackle, and he's done a nice job. Of course, it helps when you've got Mahomes and Kelce and Tyreek Hill, to kind of gloss over some situations. But that offensive line has played really well.
How about Trent Williams out west and what he's doing this year?
Yeah, Trent Williams has been a monster. And watching film on him, he's not blocking people. He's destroying people. Like, he's
throwing
like
them to the ground.
Yeah, it's like a bouncer at a nightclub, you know, that's like just like ragdolling this little guy that's like getting out of control. And it's like, he's just toying with guys. He's bringing grown men to their knees down on the goal line in pass protection. I think he's been the best offensive lineman individually, Trent Williams. Their offensive line has had their ups and downs, but I think one offensive line unit that really doesn't get as much recognition is the Patriots O-line. David Andrews coming back from missing the entire season last year has been a great story. I think Trent Brown, what he's done for that offensive line at right tackle, their guards have been phenomenal. And keep in mind, they lost Joe Tooney to the Chiefs through free agency. And yet they've been one of the most physical offensive lines in the NFL. They're certainly fun to watch. You know, anytime they run the ball, you know, 49 times, they look like, when you turn on the film of Army Navy game, that's what the Patriots look like.
Oh gosh.
Like, just run. And offensive lineman, we kind of like that.
Yeah. How much, like, is there a point in the game when you especially like those calls, or like, how does this play out for an offensive lineman? Or is it different for every offensive lineman? Do some people enjoy pass blocking more? Or is this pretty much across the board, like run blocking, that's what we prefer to do?
I don't know many offensive linemen that enjoy pass blocking. Like, you're just very reactive. You know,
you're
maybe
not in control.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Tony Boselli, when he was like in his prime and he was calling out Jason Taylor, you know, and he was like, come on, let's go. Like, Tony Boselli, like, for him, it was fun. Jonathan Ogden, that was probably fun. For most offensive linemen, pass protection is certainly not fun. And on third and long, like in silent count, that's like an offensive lineman's worst nightmare. I would say the dream scenario for offensive line is you've got a lead, 1 point lead, 3 point lead, and you get the ball back with 4.5 minutes to go in the game, and the other team never gets the ball. Like, you literally just run the football. You get a first down, you get another first down, another first down, and you run the clock out. We call it our 4 minute offense. And it's something you have designed plays for that exact same scenario. And in 2008, you know, we were the best offensive line in the league. And, you know, I say that because of the guys to my right and to my left, not because of me, but we closed games out. And I'll never forget the feeling after the game of the defense coming over and be like, y'all are bad. Like, we know when you get the ball, like, we start taking our tape off, like, on the sideline, we know that's a wrap. Like, the game is over with. It's signed, sealed, delivered. Here we go. And that's when you know that you have a special offensive line, but that's when you know you have a special team.
That's because you're a baller, Sean O'Hara. And we know that our producer, Andrew Emmer, agrees. One of my favorite people in the whole wide world, and certainly my favorite Giant of all time. And obviously I'm not alone, and we're going to get you that jersey and get it signed. And don't be surprised if it's not a Colts Jeff Saturday jersey that comes in the mail.
Those knockoffs are probably even harder to come by.
You're the best.
All right. Thanks, Lindsay.
Sean O'Hara, absolutely the best. And I mean that in the present tense. You can obviously find his work on NFL Network and also on Twitter at Sean O'Hara 60. No apostrophe, because Twitter, like NFL Shop, not an easy to navigate space for punctuation. I brought up Jeff Saturday there at the end, the two of them very often confused for one another. Wouldn't it be great? And O'Hara and I talked about this after I said goodbye, after we said goodbye, I guess. If he and Saturday went on the Manning cast together with their quarterbacks, the Mannings, they could do a game of like, who knows their center best? This information, is this Saturday or is it O'Hara? They could play off the fact that so many people mistake them for each other. Do their quarterbacks even know the difference? Just here providing content, right? It'd be so good. Obviously, the stories they could tell about the quarterbacks would be awesome, too. I know Eli used to make Sean change his pants at halftime. He's told us this story several times because the area where Eli would put his hands was a little bit more sweaty than he would like. So, you know, sweaty ass stories. Who doesn't love a sweaty ass story? Anyway, looking ahead this week, we're going to do a Friday fantasy episode, like usual, even though I know most of you are not playing fantasy anymore, at least in your season-long leagues. If you won your championship, by the way, congratulations. I lost. Boo. I didn't have a single championship. And it didn't even really come down to the wire. I was playing against Najee Harris. So my opponent, Mike Dempsey, he did get those points. But I'm sad to say that it didn't decide the matchup, because I think I set a record for like people in my championship lineup who scored less than 10 points. Thanks, George Kittle and other people. Anyway, that's a separate conversation. There are like 30% of people I understand that actually take their championships into the last week of the season, week 18. That's a number that I got from John Hansen, the guru. I have no idea if it's even remotely accurate, but because he threw that out and I assume he knows what he's talking about, I figured it would be worth it to do one more fantasy episode. And then we're going to switch to two episodes a week starting next week in the playoffs. And I hope that you'll join us for those. If you enjoyed today's episode and you do want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. We'd love to get your reviews. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. That's also incredibly helpful. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, free for most subscribers. Just download it today, tap podcasts, boom, there will be. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram at LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer, who you heard from today. Love him. He's the best. And a special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen. Now, Andrew, go get the Sean O'Hara jersey, which you own present tense, out of your mom's basement or wherever it is, so we can get that signed. And then we'll meet back here again on Friday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.